Blog Talk Radio.
BangTheBook.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to our part two of four-part preview for the 2015 NFL regular season here on the Gridiron Gambling Report. My name is Adam Burke. Joining me, as always, BangTheBook.com writer, personality, host of Betting the Buckets, our NBA podcast, and a good buddy of mine, Mr. Cole Ryan. Cole, how's it going today, man?
Excellent. I'm doing much better than Tom Brady and the Patriots, that is for sure.
Well, good. I'm going to ruin your day because I want to start by talking about Tom Brady and the Patriots. Our show here designed to talk about the AFC South and the AFC West. We're going to give out some thoughts on their win totals, talk about what they've done over the offseason, talk about how they did in the draft, all those types of things. But I do want to start by talking about New England and the situation with them. We talked about the Patriots on last week's show where we covered the AFC East and the AFC North. That show's still available at Bang the Book, and obviously a very long shelf life on all of these season preview shows. So if you haven't gotten around to it yet, make sure that you do. But Brady, out the first four games, we saw the win total adjust. I believe it's down to 10 now. We saw the week one line against Pittsburgh adjust from 6.5 down to 1. First of all, your overall thoughts on what this means for the Patriots?
Overall, it's not bad. First of all, they haven't appealed yet. I imagine they're going to appeal. This will probably get knocked down as far as the games are concerned. I don't really think it's a bad thing. And as you know, I'm a Patriots fan, so complete disclaimer on that. But what I almost kind of like it. And I know that sounds kind of weird. But the reason I like it is because now it puts that chip right back on the shoulder of the Patriots, right? Nobody likes you, you're cheating, you're a bad person, you're not good, you would only win games if you had this whole Deflategate, so take that. And usually when you win a Super Bowl, you have that hangover, you have that, everybody's out to get you. And so I think this kind of reinstates that chip on their shoulder, that drive, that motivation. And truth be told, look, I don't want my team to cheat, but I want my team to do whatever it takes to win. And if that's breaking / bending rules, then go for it. And from a betting standpoint, truth be told, I'll just use the week one spread from 6.5, as you mentioned, down to 1. I saw some people were buying it back. I saw that's 1.5 or 2 here and there. Complete overreaction. You know what I mean? Because, look, Tom Brady's great and probably one of the best ever. We can debate that forever. But for me, a 5-point swing on one guy, not really sure if you know, that's too much of a swing or not too much of a swing. To me, it seems like an overreaction. But there's a lot of adjustments going on because now you have to wonder about the total on these games too. Are they going to have a different game plan since Brady's not in there? Instead of passing so much, are they going to rely on the run? There's a lot to consider when you talk about the New England Patriots.
Yeah, there really is. I've got a few thoughts here. I'm going to kind of jump around. The first one, I'll sort of play off of yours. That is a very big adjustment. And Bill Belichick knows that, you know, at the very least, Brady's going to be suspended probably for the first couple games of the year. I'd be shocked if it stays at 4 after appeal, unless, of course, Roger Goodell is the one who decides the appeal, in which case he may want to stick it to the Patriots. But, yeah, it's a very big adjustment to the line. When Jimmy Garoppolo is going to know that he's getting the start in week one, they can game plan for it. You know, there's no surprises here. It's not like if a player goes down during the middle of the week and a team has to adjust on the fly. I mean, they have plenty of time to adjust to this. Secondly, I don't think it's that big of a deal because, you know, for one thing, the schedule is not all that tough. Pittsburgh's a decent team, but they also play Jacksonville and Buffalo in that span. If it is upheld to 4 games, Brady comes back when they take on Indianapolis in the AFC Championship rematch. But look, you've got a 38-year-old starting quarterback in Tom Brady, and now he has an extra month off. And the Patriots, I mean, a 10-6 record could probably win the AFC East. The Patriots will be able to do that even if Brady misses the first 4 games. So I think that there's a strong silver lining to this in that you've got an older quarterback, and now he gets some extra time off.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And let's face it, it's only a matter of time. And those games, I don't want to say they're not pressing games. Every game is important in the NFL. It's a short season for the most part, relatively speaking, of course. So you want to win every game. But, you know, if they were to just win 1 or even 2 of those first 4 games, although I agree with you, I don't think suspension is being upheld, but that would be considered a win, right? If they go into week 5 with 2 wins under their belt, then they're fine. And not only that, but the whole reason that I was down on the Patriots this year is that they had that early bye. Well, like you said, that early bye now means nothing to Brady. You know what I mean? That early bye, he's having it with this suspension. Now, again, for those of you who want to go back and listen to the last podcast, I predicted Miami Dolphins win AFC East, not the Patriots. So that kind of helps my prediction to a point. But I really don't think it's a bad thing. I have plenty of friends and family who are like, oh, my God, what do you think? It's horrible. And, you know, the world is ending. And I actually spin it as a positive. I think it's a good thing.
Well, we'll get into what we're supposed to talk about this week, and I'm sure we'll have a Brady update at some point throughout these last couple season preview shows here. We're going to do one probably every Tuesday. Our next ones will obviously be about the NFC, but if there is some more Brady news, we'll bring that to you as well. So we'll start with the Houston Texans. Again, I'll go through these divisions in alphabetical order just to keep everything in line there. And, you know, the Houston Texans, a very impressive turnaround last season. They went from 2-14 to 9-7, all while not having a very, a quarterback situation that a lot of people believed in. The Texans had the best player in the NFL in J.J. Watt, had a phenomenal season last year, 20.5 sacks, had an 80-yard pick six, ran back a fumble, caught three touchdown passes. The guy's just incredible. But looking at the Texans for this year, their win total was set at 8.5 at Westgate Superbook. It's with the over at -120. Got to figure the Texans are the only team that can challenge the Colts in this division, right?
You would think. I mean, it seems like it's a broken record with this division every year. It seems like the Colts are the ones that are going to win it every year, hands down. Oh, by the way, the Texans have a very good team if they can get good quarterback play. You know, because they've always, you know, Aaron Foster can run the ball. They had, great wide receivers in Andre Johnson, although he's gone now. And so you always just kind of went, the defense is there. Everything's in place with that quarterback. If they can get good quarterback play, then they're going to be a good team. I really like what they've done in the offseason. Even, obviously, Ryan Mallett says he's healthy, he's ready to go, but the jury's still kind of out on him, and they bring in Brian Hoyer, who's a veteran, and, you know, we talked about him in Cleveland and everything he's done there. So he's a capable backup, but a capable backup is kind of what they've been dealing with. I do like the fact that they bring in Cecil Shorts, Nate Washington, of course, Vince Wilfork from the Patriots. So they bolster – their team is better. How about that? I love what they did in the draft. I really think they had a slam dunk to me, Kevin Johnson and McKinney. Those guys are starters. They're going to hit the gate, and they're going to make this defense better immediately, you know. And so when you go cornerback, which is their weakness and which is what you need to be prepared to deal with when you're facing Andrew Luck on a regular basis, this team is vastly improved. And I really want to peg the over. I really want to say this is the team that's going to win the division, but it all goes back to quarterback play. And do you trust Ryan Mallett is the big question.
Yeah, this one's sitting at 8.5 at both sides at -115 at online. Are you sure that Ryan Mallett's going to be the starter? Are you sure it's not going to be Brian Hoyer?
No, not at all. I like what I'm seeing and hearing because, of course, Ryan Mallett's saying I'm healthy, I'm ready to go. But if you ask me, Hoyer's the guy. And look, they bring him in. They're familiar. The coaching staff's very familiar with him. I think he's a very capable starter. But Brian Hoyer's proved time and time again, too, that he hasn't gotten teams over the hump. You know, at least in my mind. But in the right system, which is what I think they're trying to do in Houston, they're saying our quarterback is not going to be the primetime player. He's not going to bring us. We're going to rely on defense, and we're going to rely on a strong running game. And to me, Hoyer fits that bill. Again, just to me, I think this number is dead on. I could see them with an 8. I could see them with an 8.5. It's a touchy number. When it comes to betting on it, I'm not going out on a limb by any means. By going one way or the other. The schedule kind of near the end of it kind of gets a little difficult. They got the Saints at home, and then they go to Buffalo, and then they play the Patriots before ending the season with road games against the Colts and Tennessee and wrapping up with Jacksonville. So that's a bit of a tough stretch, but we'll finally see what kind of team we're dealing with and what kind of identity they have this year when they kick it off.
I think I like the Texans this year. I liked them last year. They wound up going 9-7. And I like the fact that Bill O'Brien, you know, is kind of viewed as sort of a quarterback guru. You know, I mean, he did a fine job at Penn State getting their quarterbacks in order. You know, he's very familiar with Brian Hoyer from his time as a coach with the New England Patriots. So he knows what Brian Hoyer can do and what Brian Hoyer can't do. And I think a lot of times with the Browns last year, Hoyer was asked to do things that he can't really do. The Browns were, you know, a mess at the skill positions with Gordon out. They were kind of trying to figure out who was going to be there at running back. And in Houston, if he's got a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, Jalen Strong is probably going to play right away with Andre Johnson moving on. You know, and he's a very talented, athletic type of guy. Arian Foster, you know, he's had some hamstring issues and quad issues in the past, but he ran for 1,246 yards last year. He was in the lineup regularly. And I like this defense. I like what Romeo Crennel was able to do with them last year. They picked up a good cover corner in the first round with Kevin Johnson. And, you know, as you said, that was really their problem. I mean, if Jadeveon Clowney is healthy, which obviously a big if, you're looking at a defensive line of Clowney, Vince Wilfork, and J.J. Watt, which is absurd. And, you know, so, I mean, I think from that respect, you know, they've added some good talent this offseason. They've brought in, you know, a guy like Raheem Moore, who, you know, can be the center fielder, so to speak, back there in the secondary, really help those guys out. I think that they're building in the right direction, and it also helps that they'll probably be able to beat up on Jacksonville and Tennessee this year. Should be able to get four wins out of those two games or out of those two teams. So I like Houston over. I mean, I wouldn't bet the farm on it necessarily, but I think this is a team that has 10-win upside.
You know, I've loved Houston for so many years. Obviously, I'm a big Bill O'Brien fan. He's, you know, a Patriots disciple, Belichick disciple, if you would. But I it's like Lucy and Charlie Brown kicking that football. I've believed in them so many times, and I really just want to see it come to fruition. So, again, I think this number is dead on. If you push me to make a play on this one, I would take the over as well, only because I think Jacksonville and Tennessee are going to be so bad. Those are going to be automatic wins in the pocket. But, geez, I just, you know, make me believe it. Show me. That's how I am with Houston.
Well, move on to the Indianapolis Colts, who – made it to the AFC Championship game. They got over that playoff hump with Andrew Luck. They were destroyed by the Patriots in that game, which, you know, wound up being the subject of Deflategate. But looking at Indianapolis here, win total 10.5. The over was juiced at -170 when this one opened at Westgate Superbook. The over juiced at -150 at BetOnline right now. And, you know, there are obvious reasons why this number is so high. I mean, the Colts are a heavy favorite to win this division, deservedly so. You know, and they wound up last year starting 0-2 against the Broncos and Eagles and still cruised in the AFC South. This is a legitimate team once again this year.
Absolutely. And, you know, every time you see them, it seems like they take another step in the right direction. It seems like every year they're taking bumps and bruises, but they're going further and further and further, and they're so close to being that complete team. And I really think the reason you're seeing that heavy juice on the over is because they play in the weak AFC South. They dominated 6-0 all the time, it seems like they play in that thing. So they're getting those automatic wins, so then they just got to win their, you know, out-of-division schedule, which can be difficult and demanding, but obviously, to me, you could argue that they're one of the most improved teams, at least when it comes to free agency, because they're going out there and grabbing veterans. Andre Johnson signs, Frank Gore signs, gives them a tremendous running game, especially when you consider that they had Trent Richardson a year ago. So now all of a sudden they've got the running game. They add another wide receiver. So their offense is good to go. They're ready to go. And look, this was a money-making team last year. You know what I mean? 10-5-1 against the spread. I mean, they almost seemed like an automatic bid every week. The thing I was a little disappointed on is that they didn't really focus on defense as much as I would have liked them to. Their defense really got pushed around, to me, especially by physical offenses at times last year. And I was kind of hoping they would dive in a little bit more. I mean, Trent Cole from the Philadelphia Eagles, definitely the right direction. But Phil Dorsett in the first round, a wide receiver, I get it. He's a good player. I'm not downplaying him at all. But you got T.Y. Hilton, you got Andre Johnson, you got Dante Moncrief. To me, they could have went a little more defensively with that pick. Now, in their defense, they did follow up with, you know, defensive picks galore. But to me, again, it's all about the defense. You can play Andrew Luck, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. They're going to put up points. They have weapons everywhere. Frank Gore makes his offense even better than it was last year, if that's even possible. But can their defense hold people? Because you're going to get into whoever has the ball last wins the game. So it's a matter of trusting that defense to come up and play as well as the offense.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, the Colts really didn't – they weren't proactive on the defensive side of the football. And I like their additions on offense. I also think Todd Harriman's is a guy that can provide some good offensive line depth. That's something they can use. I mean, the offensive line has been a focus of this team for a while in trying to keep Andrew Luck upright. But, you know, Gore's going to help because, you know, Luck's going to complete a higher percentage of his passes now probably with a better running game. Andre Johnson, very familiar with this division. You know, and of course, now I'm interested to see what Andre Johnson can do with a legit Hall of Fame caliber quarterback throwing to him. I realize Johnson's old, but, you know, I mean, we saw Reggie Wayne be a productive player for a few years with Luck as his career was in the twilight. So, you know, I think there are a lot of things to be excited about with the Colts. I like their defense just from the simple fact that I think they can be coached up. I mean, last year the defense gave up 30 or more points in six games. They lost all six of them. But, you know, they had that game against the Steelers where they gave up 639 yards and 522 passing yards. That skewed their numbers a little bit. I'm going to go out on a limb here with the Indianapolis Colts, and I'm going to say that the Indianapolis Colts represent the AFC in the Super Bowl this year. And it wouldn't surprise me if they do so because they're able to get home field. The Tom Brady suspension, if it holds up, you know, that may limit the Patriots to 11-5 or 10-6. You know, Denver may take a step back as Peyton Manning gets older. The AFC North, everybody beats everybody. I think the Colts wind up with the best record in the AFC here, and I think it carries them into the Super Bowl.
Wow. Look at you with the bold pick. I'm loving it, of course. Loving it when anybody makes a bold prediction. You, my friend, have made one. I, on the other hand, I'm not as sold. I think this number is kind of dead on, too. Again, they got 11 wins last year. They do start off the schedule pretty easy. They're at Buffalo, which will probably be their hardest game until they face Houston in week five, and then, of course, New England after that. But you could argue they're 4-1 at that point. But they do have a tough stretch, three road games in November, three out of four games on the road in November. Again, at Atlanta, at Pittsburgh, at Jacksonville, of course, which should be a win. But I think this number's on. I'm picking this team about 10 wins. I'm going to go under here. They have the offense. There's no doubt about it. One of the best coaching staffs in the league. I'll give that their credit there as well. I just don't think the defense is ready yet, and I get it. Coachable. And they're up there, and I just complimented the coaching staff. They're not a bad team. They're definitely going to the playoffs, and they keep advancing every year. I can't argue your pick, but I'm going to go under. I'm looking 10 wins of this team, maybe 9.
All right, good. We'll see which one of us has bragging rights at the end of the season, because you know I'm going to remember that one since I went out on a fairly thin limb, I guess. You know, but and it was – the unfortunate thing is I had that kind of call ready to go before the Brady suspension. So it looks like I'm just kind of being reactionary to that. But, no, I really think that the Colts are a team that can take yet another step forward. Speaking of teams looking to take a step forward, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they actually wind up regressing by a game. They go from 4-12 to 3-13. Blake Bortles, you know, finally became the starting quarterback early in the season after they inexplicably went with Chad Henne for a couple weeks. Jacksonville found some things last year. Denard Robinson wound up being a pretty good running back. Of course, the former quarterback at Michigan. Blake Bortles showed some signs. They were extremely young defensively, but a major, major blow to the Jaguars already with a Dante Fowler Jr. injury.
Oh, you're right. And you know what? It's funny. It almost seems as though this team is cursed. You know, I mean, they do the right thing to me. Their draft is pretty impressive, starting with Dante Fowler. He's out. Now they do the right thing by giving him his contract, which, of course, is what they should have done. But you got to figure out, it always seems like this team is ready to make the next step. I remember watching them last year a couple times and going, man, this defense is ready now. They just need an offense. And the excuse then was Blake Bortles and needs time to develop. He doesn't have all the pieces and or weapons around him. So they're headed in the right direction, but then something happens like this injury, and then you go, man, you know, when are they going to catch a break? You know, they go in the free agent market and they put a lot of money on Julius Thomas, which I think is a mistake. I get it. He's a good pass-catching target for Bortles. He's a good end-zone target. I don't really know if he has the, mentality to go out there and play every game, play through injuries, be that prime-time, one-of-a-kind player. I think he was really a money grab, which is great. By all means, go get it. but this team just isn't ready yet. You know, they keep staying at the bottom. They keep getting these draft picks, and nothing comes of it. Again, another good environment when it comes to coaching, another good environment when it comes to building. And when you have a defense like this, by the way, they'll keep you in ball games. You know what I mean? They will keep you in ball games against some very tough opponents. You know, but, you know, they're losing people. Will Blackman leaves. JT Thomas, maybe not big deals to many people. I think is a big deal. But they're still going to have a very good defense. They're still going to keep teams that don't have very good offenses in tight games. But that's not the Colts, and that's the team they're facing. So, to me, it's going to be another long season for the Jaguars.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. This number came out 5.5 at Westgate Superbook with the over at minus 170, which was kind of mind-blowing to me. No line on the Jacksonville Jaguars win total right now at BetOnline that I can see, which is unfortunate. Maybe they took it down in light of the Fowler injury. But, you know, I look at this team, and it's really tough to gauge what they're going to do this year because 9 of their 13 losses were by double digits in 2014. And to me, that's a sign of just how far away this team was last year. And I don't think that they've really done enough this offseason to move up. I mean, the defense could get better if the offense gets better. I mean, the Jaguars are 29th in third down conversion rate. But the defense didn't help the offense out either. One player had more than one interception. It was linebacker JT Thomas. The linebacker's leading your team in picks. That's probably not a very good thing. So not only did they have a lackluster offense, but the offense was asked to go to put together long drives last season. So there are a lot of issues with this Jacksonville team. The defense is a problem in that they don't force turnovers and negative plays. The offense is a problem because they're inconsistent and young. They've got some pieces. A guy like Allen Robinson's pretty good. Marquise Lee, you know, he's got plenty of upside. Storm Johnson injuries limited him last year. They have some young talent, but I certainly don't think it's talented enough to get them to the six-win plateau to get over the number from Westgate Superbook. I mean, look, this is the Jaguars team. If you look at the look-ahead lines from CG Technology, they're favored once this season when they take on Tennessee at home. How can you peg this team for 5 upsets? I can't. I don't think anybody can. So I really didn't get this number, and if you can get plus money on under 5.5, by all means, take it.
No, and I'm with you. I'm with you 100% on this. The schedule makers didn't do them any favors. 3 early road games in a row, and they're brutal ones, too, at New England, at the Colts, and then at Tampa. And then, of course, they end with another brutal stretch. The last 4 games, the Colts, the Falcons, the Saints, and the Texans. And the Saints and the Texans are on the road. So, again, they really kind of focus on the future. They're getting there. They're putting the pieces together. But, again, we're not going to see Fowler. You know, maybe T.J. Yeldon does something. I don't know. I mean, there's so many question marks with this team. I'm with you. If they're not favored in any games, it's for a reason. And the number, as funny as it sounds, still seems a little high. I'd be surprised if this team got 2 wins. So I'm under.
Yeah, I think they'll definitely have a top 3 pick again this year. I think in terms of their draft, I think A.J. Cann out of South Carolina could probably be the best player taken, you know, outside of Fowler in this year's draft, because he'd be an interior lineman. He'll open up some holes for that running game. He was very good in the zone blocking scheme with South Carolina. Opened up a lot of holes for Mike Davis. So I think A.J. Cann is a guy that can really help out this offensive line, and they need a ton of help. I mean, Bortles was sacked 55 times last year. In total, Jaguars quarterbacks sacked 71 times, which, you know, I mean, if you're not generating negative plays on defense, you certainly can't have negative plays on offense. So, like the Jaguars under for sure, they've got some talent. They're kind of building in the right direction, but, you know, it's just going to take some time for them, especially with a guy like Bortles, who, you know, some people think was overdrafted. I tend to agree with him just because I'm a little bit worried about the competition he faced in college while he was at Central Florida. But, you know, what do you think of Bortles? Do you think he's a guy that can take a step forward over the next couple of years, or is he going to be one of those first-round busts?
No way. I think he's not a bust at all. I think he will take tremendous steps forward, and I think you could actually even start seeing it this year. And I don't mean with wins. I just mean with his progression. And I think he's a very talented quarterback. He doesn't have the tools around him. Like you said, you talked about the sacks. I mean, it just speaks volumes about what he has around him right now. And I think they've got a good quarterback. They've just got to build around him. I think Bortles will be fine.
Well, move to the Tennessee Titans here, and of course there's probably a move on this number with the drafting of Marcus Mariota. Looking at this one at BetOnline, win total 5.5, under at -130. Not a big surprise there. It looks like there wasn't a move because this opened 5.5, under -120 at Westgate Superbook. But the Titans, for their troubles of going 2-14, wind up taking Marcus Mariota. Obviously, that's the place to start with the Titans for the 2015 season because he will probably be the quarterback from day one. You know, obviously, there's some question about how his skill set will translate to the NFL. What are your thoughts on that?
He's a smart player. There's no doubt about it. High football IQ. Underrated as a leader because he's a quiet guy. I think you're right. They have to start him right away. Now they'll call it a quarterback battle and do everything that, you know, NFL teams do. But I was glad they didn't trade the pick, truth be told, because I think this team needed a face. I think this team needed something to get their fan base excited because obviously they've had some tough, you know, seasons and really nothing to look forward to. And I think he gives them a face they desperately needed. I also think, you know what, they were underrated in the offseason with what they've done. You know, they went out and actually got veteran players. And I think that's important when you're bringing in a new quarterback, you know, whether he starts or not, which of course, to me, it's a no-brainer. He starts. But you're bringing in Harry Douglas, you're bringing in Akeem Nicks, you're bringing in Anthony Fasano. They're not necessarily the biggest names you'll ever see. But to me, you get those three guys around who are veterans, they help him. You know, and they helped this team grow. And this team's a very young team. They were young last year. Now they added those veterans to add the smart to the youth. And I think what you'll see is an improved Tennessee team out the gate. Now, the young quarterback's going to make mistakes. That's going to happen. But, you know, I trust the coaching staff. I really think they're going in the right direction. To me, I think you're going to see a Tennessee team that will actually compete a lot more than people thought this year.
I'm a little bit more skeptical than you are. I mean, you're talking about an offense that was 30th in points, 29th in yardage, and then, you know, really as a corollary of that, they were 29th in points against, 27th in yards against, 28th in turnover margin, 31st in point differential. This was a terrible team last year. I mean, they were absolutely awful. And with Mariota, I think one of the knocks on Mariota, and this isn't necessarily his fault, it's just kind of the way that things worked out. Oregon just had a talent advantage over almost everybody that they played while he was there. They had a speed advantage over everybody else in the Pac-12. And Mariota can make some NFL throws. The thing is, he wasn't really asked to make a whole lot of NFL throws in college. So I think that there's going to be a big adjustment period there for him. You know, Ken Wisenhunt viewed as a guy who, you know, knows how to maximize quarterbacks. So you would hope that he can get a lot out of him. But this team quit on Ken Wisenhunt last year. That's why they were in a position to take Marcus Mariota. So I'm kind of worried about that. I'm worried if there's some holdover from last season. I mean, they brought in veteran guys to hopefully tie the locker room together. But the way that this team quit last year was just embarrassing. I wonder if you know, there's more to it than just a lack of talent.
I won't go that far. I don't know if quit's the right word as much as they seemed like they were a team that was, and I don't even want to throw in tanking, but that's almost the direction it seemed like they went last year. They knew they were going to get better. They knew they were going to work on things, you know, everything from fundamentals to building this team. And you make a great point with, you know, how bad they were last year, which leads me to believe they could only get better. But truth be told, I think they're going to compete. Their schedule, again, is difficult depending on, you know, the problem looking at the schedule, and I'll say this every show, is that, you know, everything's based off last year, and we don't know how many teams are going to be as good or as bad as last year. You know what I mean? But they end with three games on the road, or three games, two out of three of those are on the road at New England. They host Houston, and then they're at Indianapolis, and that's a tough stretch. But I'll be honest with you, I'm taking the over. I think they have a decent season. I don't think they're going to go out and get in playoffs or a wild card or anything like that. But I really think they have a good season. I think they're set up to succeed.
I'm going under, and I'm going under in a big way. I think this is a three-win team. Again, you're talking about a team that lost 9 of its 14 games by double digits. They got a lot of ground to make up. And, you know, if you lose close games, you can find silver linings. You can find some stats that are possibly going to regress in a positive way. I just don't see it for Tennessee this year. I have no confidence in Mariota as a rookie. I just, in looking at the transition from college to the NFL, just way too many red flags for me. I think he could wind up being a pretty good NFL player, but I don't think that it'll be this year. He doesn't have a whole lot to work with at the skill positions. And you know, this team has some questions with its offensive coordinator as well. Jason Michael's only 37. He went from tight ends coach in San Diego, where Wisenhunt was the offensive coordinator, to being one of the youngest offensive coordinators in the league. And you're asking a guy like him to take a player like Mariota and mold him into an NFL quarterback. And if Wisenhunt's putting too much attention into the offense, you know, then I'm worried about the defense. Ray Horton's an okay defensive coordinator, but you know, nothing earth-shattering for me. So I think this Tennessee team has issues all over the field, and I'd be surprised if they do any better than 4 wins.
Very nice. Again, another reason for us to come back to this later when the season starts for bragging rights and or when it ends.
Well, you know, that's one of the things I like about doing these early season shows is that, you know, it's good when you and I have disagreements. It makes for better conversation. And also, you know, it gives us a lot of different perspectives to look at once we get into training camp, start to see how these teams look. Of course, there are still plenty of free agents out there, you know, probably some trade opportunities as well. So some of these teams may look a little bit different, you know, once we get closer to the season. But, you know, it's good to have a difference of opinion now. And then when we reconvene, you know, probably in August closer to the season, and then we'll be able to hash those things out and see if our opinions have changed.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. Now, like you said, plenty of things could happen between now and, I mean, we still have mini camps and preseason and the whole nine, but that's the part where I think people really need to listen and to heed not only shows like this, but to do the research, because if you don't start now, you're going to be way behind by the time preseason kicks off.
Well, we'll move into the AFC West now. Talk about the Denver Broncos first and foremost. This one opened with a win total of 10 in the and minus 130 on the over at Westgate Superbook. Looking at Bet Online, it's at 10.5 with the over minus 125. And you and I talked about this last year during our playoff shows where the Broncos lose John Fox. He winds up going to Chicago. Adam Gase went with him. But you and I were both high on the Gary Kubiak hire for Denver. You know, Peyton Manning's coming back. You know, first and foremost, what do you think about the Kubiak hire now that you've had some more time to think about it?
I like it, but you have to see, right? Because I like him as a coach. I think he's a good coach. I like what he brings to a team, especially from an offensive standpoint. I want to see, you know, how he does with Peyton Manning. He obviously runs like a zone-based running scheme. That is good for this team. And they did well, you know, in the draft as well, grabbing some, you know, offensive tackles. And, you know, unfortunately, they've had some injuries as well to your boy there, your tight end out of Ohio State. They drafted, got hurt doing special teams drills, Jeff Huberman. And but really what I find amazing about the Denver Broncos is for a team that won 12 wins last year, it seems like they're flying under the radar. It doesn't seem like anybody is ready to make this a Super Bowl winning team. It doesn't seem like anybody's ready to crown these guys a team that can go all the way. And although he's older and he was hurt, you know, for much of last year, especially during the playoffs, of course, but Peyton Manning is still one of the best quarterbacks in the league, yet nobody's really touting the Denver Broncos. And I'm curious what you think of that. Do you think that's a mistake? Do you think that's just they are being touted? Maybe I'm missing it. You know, it seems like Patriots, Colts, and maybe it's the Flategate, but it seems like the Broncos aren't getting the credit they deserve.
Well, I think there's a lot of recency bias in the perception of Denver, because you look at one of their big games last year, it was the Monday night game in Week 16 against Cincinnati. And you know, the Broncos turned the ball over 4 times. Peyton Manning's got nothing on his throws. And people read a lot into that. And then they go into the divisional round against Indianapolis, only managed 288 yards of offense. And I think one of the big problems, and of course they had the bye week before that game, but the Broncos had their bye week in Week 4 last year. And that really hurts a guy like Peyton Manning. I mean, it's kind of akin to what we talked about with Tom Brady at the top of the show, where, you know, the Patriots have an early bye this year, but now Brady gets that time off with his 38-year-old body. You know, with Manning, it looked like at the end of last season he was a guy who was running on fumes. There was just nothing on his throws, kind of trying to force some balls in there that he really couldn't. And that's what's stuck in people's minds. And people think that that's going to carry over into this season. I don't really think that that's going to be the case. I mean, yes, he's older. Yes, the skill set's going to start to decline. But the one thing about Gary Kubiak is his main goal is achieving balance on offense. This is a Broncos team that will probably run the football more this year than they have over the last couple of years. And that will help keep Peyton Manning fresher as well.
Oh, I agree, and I think that helps Peyton Manning. And you're right. It did look like he was tired. It did look like he was out of gas. But I think this team is poised to go over that total. I'm going to take the Broncos over that total. I've liked some of the adjustments they made. They lost some players. Specifically, I already talked about Julius Thomas. But, I don't think that's a big loss. I think they did very well in the draft. I like the idea of them moving up to snatch, Shane Ray at the bottom of the first round. I think he'll do great alongside Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware. I think they're going to get after the quarterbacks. And truth be told, spoiler alert, I'm not sure the rest of the division is ready to play up to them just yet. So they're going to get some wins in division alone. To me, they're a lock to win the AFC West. And I think they're locked to go over this total. I think you're going to see a whole new Peyton Manning that's not only refreshed, not only focused, but almost a little bit insulted, taking that pay cut and doing whatever he had to do to stay in Denver.
I think so as well. I think there are a lot of things, pertaining to last year that have kind of jaded people. This is a Broncos team that faced a lot of passing attempts last year, the most in the league. In fact, they had to defend more plays last year because the Broncos offense, they only scored 482 points, and I say only because they scored over 600 the year before. Well, that wasn't sustainable. That was a historic year that wasn't going to happen again. So, of course, they're going to have offensive regression. By default, they're going to have a little bit of defensive regression as well. They gave up the 16th most points in the league, but they only gave up the third best yards against number in the league. So, looking at this Broncos defense, they had a guy like Shane Ray. DeMarcus Ware, he's on the wrong side of 30, but he's still productive. Von Miller is an effing beast in the middle of this defense. And they're going to get Danny Trevathan back. He was limited to 3 games last year because he was hurt again. So if he's healthy, we're talking about one of the best linebacking corps in the league, let alone in the AFC West or in the AFC, in the entire league. So this is a defense that can step up. Manning with Kubiak's balance, it makes him far more dangerous. They found something with C.J. Anderson last year. Monte Ball's already come out and said, hey, I want my starting job back. So he's coming in motivated. There are a lot of things that are going in Denver's favor here. And, I talked about Indianapolis being, my AFC team because they get home field advantage. Denver is the one team that can challenge them for it.
Oh, and I think they will. I'm not ready to be as bold as saying they're going to Super Bowl, but I like what they're doing. I think emphasizing the run or the balance that you spoke about will only help Peyton Manning, and their defense is underrated, and I think it's only going to be better. They have a great home field advantage. They end the season with 3 out of 4 home games, to include against Oakland, Cincinnati, and San Diego, to be very winnable games. I think this is going to be the team that's going to be looking for that home field advantage, and I think this is a very, very deadly team, and that's why I have no problem going over the total with the Broncos.
Yeah, that was another thing. That was a good point to mention, is that they kind of lost that home field advantage in December and January last year because they were playing on the road. And that's a big advantage for Denver when they're able to make teams come and play in those cold conditions. So definitely on board with the over there as well. Looking at Kansas City, the Kansas City Chiefs are a perplexing team every year because Andy Reid, is a guy that maximizes talent. Alex Smith, your prototypical game manager, maybe he's a little bit more than that, but he just straight up doesn't turn the ball over. Kansas City's win total opened 8.5. It's sitting 8.5 with the under slightly juiced at -120 at BetOnline. Kansas City year to year is one of those teams I think that's very tough to gauge just because they never blow you away with talent, but yet they always seem to be there, fighting for a wild card spot.
And it's ironic that they're at 8.5 because it reminds me of a team we just talked about, the Houston Texans. Every year you kind of go in there going, this team's ready and this team's got what it takes, but they kind of stumble. They just don't get there. It seems like they get to that 8-win, 9-win kind of plateau but can't get over it. Now, I know they've had some good years, and I really like Andy Reid. I'm not sold on Alex Smith. I think he's a very good game manager, and I like that you tapped him with that. The problem is, it seemed like near the end of the year, people were challenging his arm strength, and they were saying this guy can't throw deep. So they were kind of, you know, packing in that defense, making it difficult for, you know, the running game to get started because they had guys closer. And I think that's true. I don't think he can throw deep. I think he's definitely, he doesn't make mistakes. I definitely like that about him, but I'm just not sold on him. I'm not ready to go. I like what, you know, GM John Dorsey's done with Andy Reid, of course. I like their draft. I think they did very well. I think Marcus Peters is going to be a shutdown corner. I like what he brings to the team. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with losing your Dwayne Bowes of the world. He's obviously way past his prime. They didn't really do much in free agency. So to me, you're almost looking at a similar team. Now they've made plenty of changes, don't get me wrong. I just don't know where to go with this team. Like you said, they're hard to pick. They're like Houston to me. They've got great players all over the place, and I want them to do well. I'm just not sure if I'm ready to believe in the quarterback.
Of course, Dwayne Bowes passed his prime. That's why he signed with the Browns. this, you know, this Chiefs team is very tough for me. I mean, you know, they start the season out with a lot of tough games, three out of their first four on the road. At Houston, they host Denver on a short week. At Green Bay, at Cincinnati, you know, so that's a very tough road out of the gate. Also, something I think people really need to consider with Kansas City this year is that they lose a home date to one of the games in London. And as we'll talk about during our regular season shows, Arrowhead Stadium is one of the few solid remaining home field advantages in the NFL. So losing a home game is definitely going to be a problem for the Chiefs, I think. It's very hard for me to make a pick on this team. I wound up leaning over in my win total write-up for them just because, you know, Andy Reid knows how to maximize talent. Alex Smith doesn't hurt himself. Over his past 1,635 pass attempts, 23 interceptions. So,
wow.
You know, he doesn't hurt himself. The Chiefs let other teams make mistakes, and they try to capitalize on them. No, I'm not sold on Alex Smith either. I don't really think he's a guy that can go out and win a lot of games for you. If you ask him to, but a good running attack here, as long as Jamal Charles stays healthy, and they've got good depth with Nile Davis, Anthony Thomas maybe gets some more touches this year. They have some interesting players, but ultimately this is just a case where this is a team that doesn't hurt itself. In the NFL, if you don't hurt yourself, then you have a chance every week.
I agree, and that's why, look, in a coin flip, this is really a win total. I wouldn't play, period, but in a coin flip, I'm going to take the over. Because they're a disciplined team, they got to stay healthy. We can say that about any team in the NFL. But I really like their schedule as well, if everything plays out as planned. I mean, starting in week 12, they're, you know, hosting Buffalo at Oakland, you know, the Chargers, they're at Baltimore, which is probably the toughest game, and then Cleveland and Oakland. That's a stretch where they could sweep the board at that point, depending on how well they're playing. So because of that schedule, because they're well coached, because they have the talent in all the right places, I would lean over, not a strong play by any suggestion, only because I don't trust what Alex Smith brings to the table. But as you mentioned and brought up some great numbers, he doesn't make too many mistakes. So if I'm going to make a play on this, I'm taking the over.
Well, and I think this sort of plays into why you and I were both so high on Denver, because I think we could make a strong case that Kansas City is probably the second best team from a, you know, team standpoint in this division. The Chargers, more talented team, but, you know, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, they're a team that seems to constantly waste talent and completely underachieve. But I think that's part of the reason why we're so high on Denver. And there's probably not a whole lot of value. There's obviously not a whole lot of value in Denver to win this division. But also, there's probably not a ton of value in Denver to win the Super Bowl. But, you know, it is something that you'll want to consider, because when you look at the strength of these divisions, you have to consider that all these teams play six games within the division. If Denver goes 6-0 in these games against the AFC West, which they certainly can, you know, that makes the road a lot easier to get one of those top seeds.
Oh, I agree. You know, and that's, it kind of reminds me of the Colts. You know, we talked about the South and the Colts. They're almost the default winner. And the same could be said about Denver. And it's because the rest of the division just isn't up to par. You know, there's some divisions we talked about last week. We talked about the AFC East, and I thought that thing was even across the board, especially the AFC North. I mean, there's no doubt about it that one's, you know, with the exception of Cleveland, even across the board. But this one, there's just not that parity that you need. You know, I mean, Denver's head and shoulders better than, you know, everybody else, at least from my viewpoint.
Well, we'll look at the Oakland Raiders here. And the Raiders, if you look at the look-ahead lines from CG Technology, they're not favored at all in their first 15 line games this season. No line for Week 17 at Kansas City. We can assume there'll be a dog in that one as well. The only spot where they're not getting points, Week 8 when they're a home pick'em against the New York Jets. So that tells you right there what the odds makers are thinking of the Raiders for this season. Their win total at Westgate Superbook opened 5.5, under minus 140. Looking at BetOnline, 5.5, under minus 160. And, you know, we saw some good things from Derek Carr last year, but now a new head coach, defensive-minded head coach, and Jack Del Rio goes from the aforementioned Broncos to the Oakland Raiders. This was a hire that you and I were not high on at the end of last season.
And still not. Look, I have to give the credit to the Raiders because they're finally, at least on paper, seemingly turning that corner. You know, they seemed to be competitive in every game last year, and they weren't. But, I mean, they always played hard. They always played tough. Derek Carr seems like he's the real deal, and it seems like they can build on that. They obviously had a good draft. Mark Cooper is going to be a great player in the NFL, but way too much transition going on right now. You got yourself a new coach. You got, last time I checked, 10 players that already left. They went out and signed a more than that. I'm looking at 12. And you're looking at guys who are kind of either old or past their prime or are trying to get back to where they used to be. I mean, Trent Richardson, they go out and sign. Sure, that's low risk, high reward if he has a good season. You know, same with Michael Crabtree. He's past his prime. But, hey, you know what I mean? If you can get him at a bargain, which they pretty much did, who knows what will happen. The problem is, transition everywhere. New coach, new system, new players. A lot of players out, a lot of players in. To me, it equals a tough, tough season for the Silver and Black. But I'll pat them on the back because I think they're heading in the right direction. I don't think it's the normal Al Davis kind of move. Obviously, he's long gone. But I think this team is finally starting to realize that they can build and get in a better position. And like I said, they're competitive. And that's all you can really want from a team that's rebuilding.
Yeah, and like you say, I mean, they really are adding some talent to this team. I mean, Derek Carr, say what you will about his accuracy on short passes, but the kid's got a big arm. And you know, a big arm can play in the NFL. I mean, you'd obviously prefer to have accuracy over, you know, distance, but you add a guy like Amari Cooper who can make some things happen. He can play inside, outside. He's a big target. He's a kid that goes against the football. Also, one of the things that people don't really talk about with Amari Cooper – and really, Alabama wide receivers as a whole, is all of these guys can run block. I mean, that was one of the things I was fascinated by watching Nick Saban's teams in the SEC over the last couple of years is that, you know, a guy like Amari Cooper has no problem going out there and blocking a DB, and he's probably stronger than that DB too. So, you know, Cooper's a guy that's going to help out this running game, which clearly needs help. But you know, to me, I'm really concerned about the coaching staff. I don't think Jack Del Rio is a good coach. Quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo is now the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. So, you know, it's a lot of transition for Carr in his second year while trying to figure everything out. They're going to have a new scheme now. They were a bad offense last year, so maybe it'll actually help. But, you know, that's a lot of transition for one team in one offseason, especially with a team like Oakland where, you know, they weren't all that good. The players that they're bringing in are – you know, maybe upgrades on paper, but maybe not so much on the field. They still have a very long way to go.
A very long way to go. And like I said, I like everything they've done. And I like what they did in the draft. Not only Cooper, but, you know, I know a lot of people aren't necessarily as high on Mari Edwards Jr., who's a defensive tackle out of Florida State, but I am. I really think that with the right kind of coaching and guidance, he could be somebody who really is the anchor or the cornerstone in this scheme for the Raiders. And I think that will open up plenty of stuff for Khalil Mack and other defenders. I think this team is way, way on the upside. The problem is they're not there yet. And with all this transition going on, and again, another tough stretch of the schedule. I like to look at the beginning and the end or a bunch of road trips in a row. You know what I mean? So I got 3 out of 4 in November where they're at Tennessee, at Detroit, at Tennessee. Then they host Kansas City and go at Denver. Well, after that 3 out of 4 hits, then the only thing they have is Green Bay, San Diego, and at Kansas City again. So things aren't going to get easier for this team yet, but that'll be good because they'll be low. I'm going to take under. I'm going way under this total. I think they're going to get another good draft pick, and I really don't think they're too far off from being a team that can compete for a wild card.
No, I don't think so either. I think the problem is Jack Del Rio, and I don't trust him to maximize talent as they continue adding it. I like Ken Norton Jr. as a defensive coordinator. He's a guy that's going to command respect. You know, he comes out of that Seattle Seahawks defensive coaching staff. Khalil Mack is a player that they can build around on the defensive side. You know, obviously, Norton's going to have a big hand in his development, but I'm looking under as well. And, you know, one of the things I do like to look at, I like to make sure when I analyze the schedule, you know, that I'm paying close attention to who these teams play outside of the division. And Oakland has to play the AFC North and the NFC North, which means that their road games are far away. They play at Cleveland, at Chicago, at Pittsburgh, at Detroit. You know, they play at Tennessee with the last place schedule. So they've got some travel on this year's schedule as well. So that's something that you definitely need to consider, especially when, you know, really Oakland's only ability to sneak up on teams is when they make the trip out west. So they could have some opportunities to cover some numbers against visiting AFC and NFC North teams. But in terms of going out on the road, this is a team that's probably not going to cover a whole lot of numbers. So not only are they going to be a bad team from a win-loss standpoint, I think they're going to be a bad against the spread team as well, even though perception is so low on them.
Right. And, you know, you like to think that comes with the territory, but I think the fact that they played tight in a lot of games last year, although they were only 8-8 against the spread, they were tight in a lot of games. They only had 3 wins, but it seemed like they were playing very well. And I think the impression, the overall public perception, is that this team is on the upswing. And I think that's a false perception. I think that could also maybe alter a little bit of lines, or at least get some more betting on the silver and black that there should be.
Well, look at the San Diego Chargers here. And as I've already said, this is a team that's frustrating year in and year out. Looking at their win total for this year, 8 with the over at -120 from Westgate Superbook. Looking at it at BetOnline, 8.5 with -115 on both sides. And, you know, the Chargers, they had that first year under McCoy where they went out, went to Cincinnati, won their playoff game on the road, wound up going 9-7 last year, but, you know, they had an equal point differential. They scored 348. They gave up 348. You know, so really they probably should have been an 8-8 team. It perplexes me every year about the Chargers because they always seem to have talent on paper, and yet, you know, they haven't won double digits in 6 of the last 7 seasons.
Yeah, I'll start with my prediction, which is what I usually don't do. But I think not only is this going way under, but I think very well they can compete for the basement with the Raiders. I think this team is in big trouble this year. And I'll tell you what, I love Philip Rivers. He always seems to be the guy that carries this team. And it seems like they never have enough talent besides him. And he always rises to the occasion to make them better than they actually are. And there was a lot of talk about him being traded during the draft because they're not happy with that move to L.A. that they're working on. And truth be told, I think that plays a big, big factor with this team. And I think that's one of those off-the-field things that people don't take into consideration when handicapping that will actually play a role. You know, they had movement just like everybody else. They lose Eddie Royal. They lose Ryan Matthews, which to me is not a big deal. The guy was hurt all the time. They're still a quality team. But to me, they're not a team that's going to do well this year. I think they are going to flop, and I think they're going to flop bad. And I think we've seen the beginning of the end of Philip Rivers in San Diego.
Yeah, there are a lot of problems for this team. And the Rivers thing is certainly one of them. And, you know, I'm kind of worried about Rivers. I mean, it's rare that a guy is actually on an upswing in his 30s. But that's what it's been for Philip Rivers. You know, last year he was, or 2 years ago he was great, and then Ken Wisenhunt moved on, and Rivers kind of regressed a little bit, you know, down to about where we would expect him to be. But you know, they bring in Melvin Gordon, who's obviously going to help them. I mean, he's a kid that can, he's got a great motor. You know, he had some huge games in the Big Ten. But the Chargers' offensive line doesn't really impress me very much. And that was one of the things about Melvin Gordon's performance at Wisconsin, is that they had a bunch of big corn-fed white boys that were pushing the other team around. They were opening up holes. Gordon's not going to have it that easy in the NFL. And I'm kind of wondering about his vision, his ability to find holes. You know, he doesn't great sideline-to-sideline speed. So if he has to improvise, is he able to do that? Because I think that this Chargers offensive line is going to force him to improvise more often than not. You know, Antonio Gates, obviously, injury concerns with him all the time. Malcolm Floyd, he's in his mid-30s. There's a major lack of weapons on this team this year. And as good as Rivers is, you know, I was kind of rooting for him to get traded out of San Diego because, you know, I mean, the team isn't building up around him as they should. I have no interest in taking the Chargers over. Like you, I would definitely take them under, which is kind of a surprise because, I mean, there is talent here. And to ask this talent to be less than 500 seems like quite a bit. But I think we've outlined a pretty good case as to why they could struggle quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I'm with you. I'm glad to hear you say you were kind of rooting for him to be traded. To me, the perfect scenario would have been them to give away everything possible to get that second pick and Mariota because, again, they could build youth. They could almost go into a rebuilding process. Now it seems like they're going to limp on with some older players or even worse, a disgruntled Philip Rivers. Look, to me, if this team starts losing early, it's going to get ugly. I don't think he'll give up because he's too much of a competitor. But they just don't have it around him. I like Melvin Gordon. I think it's probably one of their best running backs probably since LT back in the day, so I think they'll be better. And I like their draft. I think they had a decent draft. They're just in a division that has more talent than they are. They're in a situation where they're in flux. They have a lot going on, and they have an unhappy quarterback. And not only an unhappy quarterback, and I don't want to harp on it, but he is the heartbeat of this team, the face of the franchise. So when he goes down or doesn't care anymore, the whole team's going to follow him. You know, they start off with 2-3 on the road at Cincinnati, at Minnesota. I don't care who you are. You don't want to play on the road in the NFL. And then they end with 3-4 on the road at Kansas City. And then they host Miami before going to Oakland and going to Denver to end the season. This, to me, is a team that could be picking first next year. At least we'll say top five. I don't want to go that crazy about them. But I'm really picking this team to go in the bottom. I think this win total is way too high. I'm maybe giving them 3-4 wins. I think it's a horrible season for San Diego.
Wow. And if you look at that Oakland game in week 16, it's on a short week with short travel, you know, but that's coming off the Miami game and then possible look ahead to Denver. So the Oakland game, certainly no gimme late in the year. The worst place that you can be in the NFL is in limbo. And I think the Chargers are in limbo. I think they need to do one of two things. They either needed to go for it this year, try to maximize on the time that Philip Rivers has left, or they needed to start the rebuild. And they did neither one of those things. And, you know, I think that kind of sends a little bit of a message to the team. And I don't think it's one of those messages of confidence in a young team where it's like, hey, we believe in you. You know, we see that you're going to get better. I think it's more of the front office doesn't know what direction to go with this team. And that's a problem because there has to be a plan. There has to be an identity. The Chargers have not had an identity for a while now. And for them to sit there, you know, kind of in that in-between stage, you know, I think that they're going to fall off in the wrong direction. So I agree with you. While I don't think they'll be as bad as 3-4 wins, a 6-10 type of season would not shock me at all. And then they're really left with some huge decisions. Not only might they move to L.A., but if you go 6-10 or even a 7-9 or, you know, even worse than 6-10, what do you do with Philip Rivers at that point?
You trade him. You trade him. Get rid of him, do whatever you need to do. Now, that's why I was kind of hoping they trade him during the draft because I think maybe that's where his stock was a little bit higher. If they come out and have a bad season, regardless, to me, if they have a bad season, he's not going to go out there and throw 50 touchdowns. You know what I mean? So what that'll turn into is going, is he past his prime? Is he not there? I would love to see him on a team that just needs that piece. Imagine Philip Rivers in Kansas City. Of course, they're not going to trade in the AFC West, but imagine Kansas City and Philip Rivers in Houston. You know, then I really think we're talking about those teams to be a lock for the playoffs and maybe even Super Bowl contenders, depending on where he goes. Now, it's probably more likely they ship him somewhere like a Tennessee. You know what I mean? But I want to see him get his chance. I want to see him get his due. I don't think this is a good fit. And more importantly, as cliche and awful as it sounds, the atmosphere around his team just isn't good right now. And they're going to find out real quick that things are going bad, and I think they're going to hit that panic button early, and I think there's going to be changes. And there's going to be changes soon for this team.
Well, that's exactly what I was saying is, you know, if you don't get rid of Rivers now and you wait through a, you know, lackluster season where maybe you go 6-10, you know, then you're trading him for 60 cents on the dollar as opposed to when you could have got 90 or 95 cents on the dollar or even got
right.
A team to overpay for him, especially with Wisenhunt, who's familiar with Rivers. Rivers had a ton of success with him. You know, I'm not surprised that Tennessee kept the pick and took Mariota But if you're the Chargers, you really should have sweetened that deal as much as you could, you know, because you do need a new face of the franchise. You're absolutely right. Because as good as Phillip Rivers is, you know, you can sit there and say, hey, what has this guy ever won for us? And, you know, nobody would have really been able to question you on that. So Chargers is definitely a team that looks like they're going to be on the way down. We got just a few seconds left streaming live, so if you are listening live, thank you very much for listening. Cole, any final thoughts on any of these eight teams or anything that we may talk about in the future?
Just one more thing on the Chargers. You know, the reason I wanted them to push for that trade is because they're going to L.A. They're making a new move. Really, the reason I bring up the face of the franchise and speak to that is because it was their chance to turn that corner. You're right. I would have gave up the shop. I would have gave up the shop to get that pick because you have a young quarterback who would be on your team for decades to come in a new stadium, a new environment. It would bring excitement to the team. And not only that, but it would lower expectations. I hate to talk NBA, but, you know, I'm a Celtics fan. Same way with the Celtics. Celtics go to the NBA playoffs after everybody thought they were going to be horrible, and they traded all their great players, and they do horrible in the playoffs, and they get a seventh seed, and Celtics fans are giddy. That's what San Diego needed to do. You know what I mean? To have no expectations, have a good young quarterback that could lead this team for years to come, and I really think they dropped the ball, not only with not trading him, but this season. I think it's going to be ugly. But all right, I'm off the I hate San Diego bandwagon.
Do you think it's going to be Oakland and San Diego and L.A., or do you think St. Louis actually makes a move out back out there?
I know St. Louis is pushing it from everything I read, so you never know. You never know. It comes down to finances. It comes down to politics, which are a couple of things when it comes to football I try not to dig too deep into. But to me, it seems inevitable that they go, that someone goes. It's a matter of time that they go. It's just a matter of when and where.
Well, don't let me forget to talk about that with St. Louis, because if Oakland and San Diego move, you know, it's not really an earth-shattering kind of thing. I mean, it's a relatively small move for those two teams. But I think it's something we should talk about when we talk about the Rams here in a couple weeks, you know, where that would be a huge move. And we may see some fan backlash throughout the season about it. And I'm just wondering if that'll have any effect on the Rams' performance for 2015. So try not to let me forget to talk about that. And you know, I think it'll be a very good talking point for our NFC South and NFC West show. So a lot of good stuff today. We're through half the league on two shows so far. We'll be back on again next week with the NFC East and the NFC North. Any final thoughts, Cole?
Betting the Buckets, my NBA betting podcast. Three times a week, NBA playoffs are going hot and heavy, and I got the info. Talk about all the games, give out picks, especially now with the playoffs. I give out picks in every game. So please tune in. I'd love to have you aboard. It's a quick podcast, in and out, and a lot of fun. So can't wait for it.
Yeah, and my MLB podcast, The Bettor's Box, not as quick as Betting the Buckets, but I go over a lot of things, including some sabermetric analysis, daily fantasy sports tips, pick for the night of the show. Every Monday, Thursday, you can catch that at Bang the Book, so make sure that you're tuning in for that. Follow Cole on Twitter at ColeRyan9. Follow me on Twitter at SkatingTripods. If you're not already following at Bang the Book, you probably should be. But I guess that'll do it for us today. So for Cole Ryan, I'm Adam Burke. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.